freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
I don't even really know what to say at the beginning of a show like this. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Brock and Salk Show, now a podcast weekly. Glad to have you with us. Brock and I are together. After the big tearful goodbye, you know, we're just here. Weird.
It's weird.
It does feel weird.
All the you know the weirdest? Like all the salespeople came down Friday. Like everybody in the office, like, okay, I mean, I love you all, but we're not quite going away.
Right, like we're still here. You're doing your hits, and like Monday right off the bat, you're there at 8 o'clock working with Danny and Gallant. And there I am Monday and every day at 12:30 with Tom and Jake and Stacy. And so, you know, we're still around. I'm sure for the audience, the thing that they're most excited about, because Kyle's part of that Tom, Jake, and Stacy show also, is they'll finally get their opportunity to hear from the man, the myth, the legend, Boy Howdy, who finds himself sort of a man without a home now.
Great. Here we are, folks.
Oh, no.
We've finally done it.
Oh, no.
We've found more space for me.
Is that what we've done?
Yes, we have.
Are you comfortable with the sitting?
I'm interested right in between you guys.
I hate this.
Like, instead of being in a, like a glass removed, I finally get to be right in between two of you.
Kyle, we got to find a new room.
I can't take it seriously. I feel like this isn't real. What is happening?
People should see the way this is set up. So Kyle is sitting at a board. We're in a small studio, not the big 710 studio. So Kyle's sitting at a board, kind of controlling everything with his long arms. Brock and I are opposite each other. And then on the other side of the table from Kyle, completing the square, is Howdy, as if he's just always supposed to be there, like, oh, I'm right here in the middle of everybody. Let's go. I'm the host of the show. It's my deal. Let's jump into it, I guess. We don't really have to rush the way we would on a show.
Did you feel different watching the game Sunday, knowing that it'd be a couple days before we digested it? Were you just as engaged? Because I found myself a little more relaxed.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I'm just kind of taking it in. I still took some notes
and
I've got
like
plenty of thoughts.
Looking
up
Airbnbs and things that I might want to do for vacation.
But were you
some of that.
Were you as wired in as you normally were taking it all in?
No. In fact, things are changing at home. This is like with me not doing the show every day. Heather's like, so here are all your new list of responsibilities. And one of them was like, so now that you don't have to like do all your takeaways the next day after the game, like, do you still need me to like be responsible for the kids during the game? And this, I was like, how do I answer this? Like,
how much ground do you want to give right now?
Know.
Oh yeah, sweetie, I'll be totally
some,
engaged.
But
with
like,
you
do understand, I still have a podcast. I got to go on the air tomorrow. Like, yeah, yeah. So anyway, no, I was pretty engaged. And look, I'm watching this team so far, and I guess we can start here. I think you've got five guys that so far have shown that they are ready to play and be good big-time contributors for the Seahawks this year. And I'm going to include Carson in that list, even though he kind of went through the fumbling issues, because he's been a star for them, I think. You got Russell Wilson, and we'll talk a ton about him in a minute. You got Will Dissly, who is he the best tight end in football right now? Every he just catches touchdowns. He catches big plays. He's a good blocker. You got Jadeveon Clowney with the ridiculous pick six and just his ability to engage. You got Tyler Lockett, who's always open. And you got Chris Carson. After that, all right, I'll give you sort of a half on Michael Kendricks. He's been around and his role's kind of in and out. Other than that, like, that's the Seahawks right now, is those five and a half guys, don't you think?
Well, this goes to what, you know, you've talked about quite a bit through the years, and that's stars. How many stars? And it probably plays into my overriding thought I had, Mike. I've watched this team now. We've watched them for a quarter of the season. The first quarter's done and over, and that's how Pete always looks at it. And I've kind of learned to do the same over the years. And I look at this first quarter, and I say, this is a good team. This may be a very good team. It may be a 10-win team. Like, this is a good team, but I don't see great. Right? I've not left any of these four games, and even the game over the weekend, say, yeah, this is a great team. This is a 12-13 win the division like it was in 13, like it was in 14, like I felt to a degree in 15. Like, this is a good to very good team, and because of those five-star players and number one at the top, Russell continues to be just, phenomenal.
He was so good this week.
Didn't have a pick in the first quarter of the season. Should have yesterday, threw one into trouble. But
the one that just got over the dude's head?
It was in the end zone that he should have thrown the check down to Carson, and he kind of panicked, which he's done zero of this season. But still, no interceptions over the course of the season. But I think those five and not much further stretch you to a good team, maybe a very good team if your quarterback's awesome. But I just don't. I just haven't felt great. Like, oh man, that is a great team.
Yeah.
That is a 12 win. That team looks like they did in their heyday.
All right, so fine. I would agree with you. I agree with that. And I got these five guys. Let's throw Kendricks on the list for 5.5.
Bobby's not on your list.
No. Has Bobby done anything great?
He's made a lot of tackles.
He's been fine.
Somebody's got to make the
team
tackles.
In tackles, like, yeah. Significant.
And he's been fine.
I think he's got double-digit tackles every single game.
Yeah, he's been fine. 18-tackle game. Really.
But he hasn't gotten blitzed and got home. He hasn't created a takeaway. He hasn't made a pick.
Yeah, I'm not taking a shot at other people out there. They just haven't stood out in any way. I mean, I guess Shaq Griffin at times has stood out, and maybe he's the other half to go with Kendricks. Like, between those two guys, you got one. But your safety play has generally been subpar. Brock, I know you've been all over Trey Flowers. I thought that was a phantom penalty, and without that, I actually thought he played a pretty good game.
He played his best game of the season.
But you know, we haven't really seen much. I mean, you know, I've heard people saying that, and I heard Clayton say earlier this week that Ziggy had a good game. Like, I guess. I know he kind of had the cheap sack at the end. Like, I didn't notice him a lot. Like, occasionally, and I was trying to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
Where's 94 once I tried to figure out what number
he was? Have you figured
out
the numbers, by
the
way? It's killing me. It
is
just that, and the fact that they swap numbers and they're like all in the 90s, I can't.
Super confusing.
Huh?
They're defensive linemen. They wear numbers in the
90s. I know, but the edge guys don't
all
have to. No, Michael Bennett wore a number in the 70s. Like, you know, Puna could wear a number in the 70s. They all got these 90 numbers out there, and then they all traded them, and none of them are in the right uniform.
Kyle, so can you put them all together right now? 90, Rasheem 91,
Green,
92,
98, 93. Yeah. Jadeveon Clowney,
does Rasheem look like
90,
a 98?
Oh, already
Ziggy Ansah, 94.
Right.
Does Ziggy look like a 94?
No, it's
yes,
a mess.
Yes, he went to great lengths for that number. He better look
does
like a 94.
Does LJ look like a 95?
No. By the way,
he doesn't look like an NFL player, so
he
forget
played pretty. Hey,
number.
He had a pretty good game.
He made one tackle.
Oh,
what a
dude,
guy.
Dude, stop.
Oh, my gosh.
Stop. He had a pretty good game, I thought, on Sunday.
95 looking pretty good on him.
All right. Well, anyway, I think you could start trying to say that you get five, maybe seven guys that are doing it. The question that becomes, Brock, if they're going to do take that leap and go from being a good team, even a pretty good team because of Russ, to being a team that's challenging Dallas and New Orleans and some of the best teams in the NFC for supremacy, they've got to be, as Pete always says, a developmental program.
Yes.
So who's on the list of guys then that can develop into that and turn you from good to great?
Yeah, well, I'll give you four, I think, along those lines. And really, then you would probably stretch to, and I hadn't thought about it since, you know, you brought up that point of five stars. You know, these guys develop, then you're talking 8, 9, 10 stars. And that basically is what you had in your heyday. That's basically what you need, I think, in this system to flourish. And I do think, you know, number one is you are going to get a star back. Jaron Reed is going to come back in 2 weeks.
That's a good point.
And he has got to come back and be the guy that he was last year and maybe even more. And you're going to get a motivated Jaron Reed. He's got a short season. He's going to have fresh legs. He's only going to play 10 games.
Contract year.
He wants his money.
Yeah.
And I think you're feeling that absence in the middle. Right, I think he is a guy that will help Clowney, that he will, especially when they rush four out of more of their base. He's got wiggle. He's got thump. He's got the ability to do what Puna and Al Woods and some of those other D tackles can't do, and that's really affect the quarterback. He's got to come back and be a star. He would have been on your list last year. If you'd have had five stars from a season ago, his 10.5 sacks absolutely would have put him on that list. So I think he's way, way up there. DK Metcalf's got to grow. And I'm curious how long.
So close on that game.
I am curious
Sunday, right?
How long Russell's going to keep feeding him and keep feeding him and keep feeding him. You look at the targets versus receptions list, right? The number of times a player is targeted, how many times they come down the reception. And it's not all DK's fault, right? A lot of it is, hey, he takes more risk on deep shots. Hey, you're thrown into coverage. Hey, these are contested balls.
Yeah, like the balls he's throwing to Will Disley are like, okay, easy completion to your tight end.
Correct.
Versus 40 yards down the field to a giant wide receiver jumping in the air.
Correct. But you've still got to come down with those balls.
Yeah.
Like, you're still in one-on-one situations. We still spread it out and we move the formation and we give you, that was pretty cool on Sunday, a little formationally in the red zone. They brought Tyler like in a jet sweep motion and you thought, oh, is he going to be in the option? Is this a jet sweep? No, it was solely to create even more space, a one-on-one with DK, and he just doesn't win, right? He just didn't go up through the DB or he just doesn't, you know, and there's he's been getting ample opportunities. But for this offense, he's got to become a star. And Tyler's there, as you mentioned earlier. Will Disley's is emerging. He's really their number two guy. But DK has got to grow, I think, into that star.
He's not even on my list. I got to be honest with you. Like, if you're banking on DK Metcalf becoming a star this year for them to be great, then you don't think they're going
to
be great.
I mean, I need him to be a star. He's got a sweet pink mouthpiece.
Dude,
now.
How about that? Dude,
last
trying
time
to take
you
a
had
swipe
the baby
at it.
Sucker, and now you got the pink one. Like, he just looks great. That's all he really needs to do is just look awesome.
What a dumb penalty on that dude. On like, what are you doing?
So bad.
Look, I disagree with you on that one. I think it's all on defense. Your offense is fine. Honestly, like, I don't think you need any, maybe some of your offensive linemen coming together, but the way Carson's running with the ball, the way Russell's playing, the way Disley's playing, the way Lockett's playing,
when you play elite teams, they're going to continue to roll to Tyler.
I know, that's fine.
Will Disley's really nice, and they're going to say, that's great, he can have his 5 receptions for 50 yards.
But with the other guys, I think you're okay there. Like, if you really want to be a team that is challenging for a Super Bowl, it's got to be, as you said, Jaron Reed, I'm totally there with you 100%. Clowney.
Okay, let me get to those two.
It's got
to
be Ziggy, right?
Yes, that's 3 and 4.
It's got to be Ziggy.
Or Ziggy and Clowney in that combination. Like, those guys have to develop. They've got to be on your list. Was Clowney one of your 5 stars?
I had him as one of my stars. I think he's played pretty darn well.
I think his playmaking and that interception was worth every bit of what they're paying him, what they traded for him, and the threat of what he is, and the number of screens people are throwing against him, and the threat that he is down in and down out. But the only way they're going to be a great team, the only way they add to their star list is if Ziggy Ansah emerges. Did you listen to any of him, by the way, post-game Sunday?
I didn't hear it.
Yeah, he was with Jen post-game Sunday, and it was interesting. And this is totally like a psychologist and overreading it, but it was almost like relief. She's like, how fun was that? You know, Jen's energy is whoo, way, way up there. And Ziggy's kind of a baseball player energy at that moment. So it was kind of what we feel at times in those post-game interviews. And so Jen's kind of teeing him up, like, how exciting was it? Amazing. And he was just like, yeah, it was nice to be out there. Like, oh, man. It was just he said it was just a relief to be playing. And I was like, that is a bummer. But I could take that 1,000 different ways, right? And I could run with it and say, see, this guy just is relieved to be playing. See, this guy just doesn't love football. And I could take it that way. I'm not going to, because I'm going to take it down the road of, I think this guy is just beat up a little bit physically. I think he's a little bit beat up emotionally. And I think he's still very much figuring this thing out. But they don't get to 12 wins. They don't win this division unless Clowney and Ansah are who they believe they could be when they traded for him.
But that's not the developmental portion of the program, right? I mean, the developmental part means that guys like Rasheem Green turn himself into, you know, he had a night, by the way, hell of a play on Sunday. You need to have more of those. And if Rasheem Green is able to continue that, I think you need one of these safeties to step up and not be a liability. McDougal's been bad. Tedrick's been worse. Leno's been not very good. I mean, the 3 guys who've played safety, Blair wasn't even active this week, and I don't know if that's was that injury or is that just play? I mean, regardless, you know, Marquise Blair's not active. Dude, you got to get something. If you want playmaking, which is what you've said, well, who are the playmakers generally on teams? It's safeties. It's guys rushing the edge, and it's your safeties.
So what is more likely to happen? The receivers develop, Jerron Brown, a DK Metcalf, Malik Turner. Eventually, at some point, maybe one of these rookies, because of injury, gets activated. Wow. What is more likely to happen and develop, that receiving core or that secondary?
Well, it's a good question. I'm going to go with the thing that needs to happen is that Marquise Blair needs to emerge. Because for 3 years, we've seen that Leno and Tedrick aren't that good. I mean, I prefer Leno to Tedrick. Somebody else prefers Tedrick and his terrible penalties to Leno. I don't. Whatever.
Some like hot dogs, some like brats. All the bottom line is, it's just a bunch of pig intestines shoved into a case.
That's exactly right. That's what that is. Neither of those guys are star NFL caliber. It's debatable whether either of them are starting NFL caliber. Marquise Blair, second round pick, who's at least got a shot to do something special, and I'm hoping that the development of him over the year is enough to turn him into a playmaking safety. Safety that's going to be a difference maker for them. That where else are you going to start betting on development?
That D-line. The overall D-line.
Puna?
And Pete was speaking to it Sunday. He spoke to it on Monday. He was talking about, hey, Clowney Ansah, they're just getting started. I know they played 4 years in this league or 5 years, but they've been in other programs, right? They've done things differently.
Is there anything that playing together? There's no chemistry.
Clowney was an outside linebacker in Houston for the majority of his career. What we're asking him to do, Ansah played in a program that was downtrodden. trodden, to beat him up physically, beat him up emotionally, right? It can he play in this system, and can those two play together? No. This isn't like, oh my gosh, with more timing, their stunts are going to be so much better. I think it is purely a comfort in that program, a comfort in the language within that program, a comfort of, no, we're legitimately supporting you. Right, and I thought that that was also a huge takeaway from Sunday's game. Is last week was all about, man, we got their back. Coach Pete has Chris Carson's back. Like, we are legitimately here for you guys.
It paid off.
And when you come from a program with Matt Patricia, you come from a program with Bill O'Brien, you come from a program in Houston that grinds you, you come from a program that's more abundant Detroit, you know, I think that that is what Pete is going to lean into, is these guys are just getting started. Do I buy that completely? No. I think you're pros, and you've played a half a dozen years in this league, and you should know how to play this game. But is there something almost to that psychology that this is, hey, I'm telling you, this is real, okay? We pay off our words. We are encouragers. We do play on the positive ends of things, and so maybe that is the vibe that can produce further.
That definitely worked with Carson this week, and we come back to him in a second. For a moment, just focus again on these two defensive ends. When they were brought here, right, because they were sort of piecemealed in at different times in the offseason, as they get ready to play the Rams Thursday night here, and the Rams, and I heard you talk about it, the Rams are all about the edges, right, and attacking with their stretch play and then what they do to you in play action and all that, it sure seems like Ziggy Ansah and Jadeveon Clowney, if you were looking for two defensive ends to be the right fit against the Rams offense, it would be these two. They're both excellent against the run, better than most defensive ends are, and then they have the ability to adjust and get to the passer. Is it possible that that's why these two, more than anybody else, are here, because of their ability to set the edge against the run and specifically against the best team in your division?
Yes.
It's got to be, right?
You have to win your division in order to have a first-round bye, and in order to get to a Super Bowl, it's been proven in this town, the three trips you had that home field advantage in your building.
So am I judging how they do this week or this Thursday? Am I judging that based on their sacks and their ability to get to the quarterback, or are we judging that based on how well they stop the run on the edge?
I think it's
because I don't know if I'm capable of that.
Well, what I will be watching,
you're gonna have to help.
What I will be watching is chaos, in of which you created almost none against these guys. Remember, they had 300 yards in first down in this building in this match
against the Rams.
Yeah. Against the Rams, it was a joke show. You could not stop any of them. So, no, I think it was a priority, and you looked in your division, and Jimmy Garoppolo, and you've not seen the Niners, by the way, the undefeated Niners, and seen everything that they like to do and their run and their play action, and certainly the Rams as well, are a group that wins on the edges. And this team could not do that in the absence of Bennett, in the absence of Averill, and made it a priority to get these two difference makers. And, Mike, they've got to show up in significant, significant ways Thursday night. I mean, they have to be, like, enough is enough. Clowney's got enough legs underneath him. It was nice to see Ansah play with very limited practice. They've got to be guys that your eye, you don't need me, your eye, Howdy's eye, Kyle's eye.
Well, Howdy obviously will know. I mean,
all of your eyes should be able to see some of that wreckage.
Well, you want to know what my eyes can tell, and I hope anybody's out there can. It doesn't take much. I mean, juvenile football viewers get a chance to see this guy do something like this play, and you can't help but take notice.
Ball at the Arizona 22, and he's going to get the toss sweep left side. He's got some blocking. Puts his shoulder pass down. Barrels over a man, first down. Knocked out of bounds at the 10. I told you, nobody wants to get in the way of Chris Carson as he picks up 12, and that will put him over the top. 20 carries, 108 yards. This is what Seahawks football is based on, and when you want to run down the clock, look for number 32.
Dude, that was one of two plays he made in that game that were just spectacular. I love that one. That was on a running play. There was another one, I think, on a little throw to the left side where he came down the sideline and just, didn't even try to make a move. Just, I'm knocking you on your keister and running right through you, and he picked up another 7 yards afterwards. That's the Chris Carson that I know, Pete Carroll. That's that big 3-2 that looks so good running through you, right?
Gosh, it was just so nice to see some lanes for him early, right? Just the opportunity for him to get going.
It wasn't early, though. It took a while. I mean,
They ran some traps. They ran some things early.
But that running game still looked a little stagnant, and then I thought they threw – we can talk more about it later, but I thought they threw to open up the pass to say, hey, get out of the box a little bit. We're fine. The lanes are open. We're going to throw. And then all of a sudden in the second half, once they'd worn him down a little bit, Carson's just a monster.
Don't want to tackle that,
dude. No, nobody does. You could see it. I'll pass.
The big number three.
The big 3-2 looking so good.
Looking right. So good Sunday.
Do we have to, like, we don't tease to break or anything here, right? We just like take
it. No, it's in your DNA to do it if you'd like to.
I don't want to. Huh? I don't want to if I'm not supposed to.
It's a podcast, Mike. Please respect the
Will
format.
Will you please just stop trying to make this a radio show? It's not a radio show.
I mean, I know that.
Will you adapt a little bit?
I'm trying.
Overcome and improvise.
It's the first one.
10 years we've been working on adapting, overcoming, and improvising.
Right.
And here we are, and we're doing none of them.
All right. Well, we're going to do Blue 42 or something akin to it in a couple minutes. Shut up. It's next. All right. Well, thank you guys for being with us through this. We're still feeling our way through how this is going to work every single week, but enjoying having you be a part of it. And hopefully you have subscribed. A lot of different ways to do it. You can do it on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts. So it's immediately just sent to your phone every single week.
Is this
so
your podcast voice? Is that what you tried to do coming out after you were publicly shamed?
I guess so. Howdy made me feel guilty over the last moment or two. So here I am trying to make this seem a little bit more podcast friendly. All right, let me ask you a couple football questions as we've done together for really the entirety of our relationship. We'll start with this one. Gardner Minshew, man. He had yet another impressive game. That play he made where he dodged a couple of guys, ends up throwing the touchdown, that was ridiculous. What are we going to see? Is this going to be a legitimate star in the making for Gardner Minshew?
As all of that was going down, I was thinking about, remember in preseason I was able to go down to Stanford. Fox was kind enough to fly me down to a practice. And I was down there and I was chatting with David Shaw at the practice for a long time. David was super accommodating before practice. We were talking about different games and the schedule and systems. And I was kind of asking Coach Shaw, like, are you going to be a pass first, a run? How do you do this, right? You've always been a run identity. You know what? And we eventually got to Mike Leach, because every conversation, the Pac-12 eventually gets to Mike Leach. And then it got to Gardner Minshew. And I said, yeah, I was just actually watching that tape last year. And your guys' tackling was, man, it was poor. And he said, it was poor. But we lost that game because of one guy and one guy alone, Gardner Minshew. And he said, you just wait. That dude's going to make it in the league. David Shaw spent a lot of years coaching for John Gruden in the NFL, had some background. He goes, you just watch. His game will translate to the NFL because he's got just stones. He's got guts. It just, you know, he showed it time and time and time again. They won 11 games. And whether it was Utah, whether it was Stanford, it was big moments late in games. I mean, save for Washington, just about every other opportunity Gardner got the year before, he delivered when the game needed it and got the biggest. And is that not the NFL? And he's done it now, really, in his three starts. He did it in Houston, drove him down, and ultimately they run the ball on a two-point. They throw it. Yeah. They probably get it.
Probably.
And he wins all three of these games. He did it in Denver. And I'll tell you, the play that was amazing is he got absolutely obliterated. He got hit as hard as you can get hit. He got sandwiched high and low on that final drive with about a minute to go. And you see him, and he's very slow to get up, and his teammates like pick him up, and he just wills himself. And then he throws this 20-yard deep out that gets him in field goal range, and they pound it down there, and they ultimately win.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've learned from another guy in this market, when you've got a supporting cast in Jacksonville, Coughlin's going to build it to run the ball.
And he does. He handed the ball off 37 times.
Yeah, they ran for 250 some yards as a team.
269.
There you go. So you've got enough supporting cast that, hey, Gardner, go make five plays a game. And, you know, that Baker Mayfield, that little comp of Baker that Tom McShay gave us in our final week of doing shows, when he's like, doesn't Baker look a little bit like a poor man's Baker Mayfield? And just some of his playmaking ability.
But what they're doing right now is very different. Baker's being asked to put everything on his shoulders and throw it all over. I mean, he threw over 300 yards this past weekend.
But they ran it first.
They did. Chubb was really good, by the way. Kyle, please keep your mouth shut over there on how good Chubb looks versus Rashad Penny.
Who's that?
Yeah.
Could they got him?
Or Sony Michel. He's all right.
Both those guys
could they
look
got him?
Pretty darn. Yeah, they could have.
They could have got Chubb?
Could have. Yeah. Both those guys look pretty darn good. And Rashad Penny's not doing much.
No, they're the saving him for Thursday. Bro.
Saving
it's
him
a
for
short
Thursday.
Week. How they got to have week.
How big did Penny look in his.
Saving him for Thursday. Don't worry about Nick Chubb. Not a big deal,
did
obviously.
Penny looked. I didn't recognize Penny.
Well,
in
he
sweats.
Might have like a swollen hamstring.
At least so he was able to. At least he was able to stay on the sideline and not go running out onto the field.
So, right now, give me your Mike Salk prediction mode. Right, you're good
for
at
Gardner.
This yes, this year, what they're 2-2. He's 2-1 as a starter. Is this a team that wins now 9 or 10 games, and all of a sudden the $40 million to guarantee to Nick Foles becomes a questionable?
He's got a pretty lousy division, right? I mean, you start looking at the AFC South; it's bad.
He'll get the Colts twice with Jacoby Brissett.
Yeah, he's not very good. And
the Titans are up and down.
Yeah,
the Texans lose.
Struggling yesterday.
Yep. Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, they could win nine. I don't think they win 10, but I think they could win nine, and he becomes a legend. And does Nick Foles get his job back next year? Not if they win nine games with Gardner Minshew and he plays well and he doesn't throw picks. I think what I liked this week was the two touchdowns are great. The play that everybody noticed where he all the fancy footwork.
Sure.
But no picks. Yep. Like, he's finding a way to keep his offense out on the field.
Nick
and that's
Foles'
his job.
Career is so strange. He gets it's jobs so when he shouldn't. He loses jobs when he shouldn't.
Yes.
It just never goes the way it should be expected.
Here's one other element with Gardner that I think there is a relatable comp back here to Seattle. When Russell kind of took this team over in 2012, it had a very strong defensive personality, mm-hmm. and you needed in Russell. And Russell's personality is very different than Gardner's, but you needed something. But you needed some juice,
just a little.
But Russell did it with his athleticism, his steadiness, his toughness. He just had some juice to him, and I think that defensive group, yeah. right, will look at a Gardner and go, "Man, this kid is legit. I'm buying it. This is not just a show." And he's got just some legitimate gall to him and guts to him. Yeah, and he's winning over that crew.
Since we're talking quarterbacks and since we have a little extra time here, can we spend a moment on Kyler Murray and what you saw this weekend? Because I'm programmed not to like this guy. I thought he seemed like a huge phony in all of his sort of before the draft interviews and the shows and all that. Like, I was really turned off. I thought he was good. Like, I think he's a pretty good little player.
Did he remind you of Russell in his first start in that building? Russell's very first NFL
escapability
start.
Escapability and yep. all of that. I mean, I don't think he's as good as Russ is. I don't think he throws the ball as well or as accurately even as Russ did in his rookie year. But he's faster, and he's probably more escapable, and mm-hmm. his team around him is not as good as Russ's was. So, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely positive that there will be games in the next 5 years where he wins it by himself against the Seahawks. It's going to drive you crazy.
Yes, you know what I was thinking watching him? while I wasn't cranked up to 10 intensity and I could like take some things in and watch a game with a little more joy, I was thinking of you in screen passes. Because you have said about
too
Russell
short.
In these screen passes, like he is just too short. And Arizona must have ran like eight of them to every personnel they could, receivers, tight ends, running backs, just about everybody. But it was a screen that got picked.
Like there's going to be some problems, I think. But some of his maneuverability and escapability is ridiculous. And, you know, maybe he'll be the first good player in that franchise's history because they're a joke.
Yeah, but
they're putting Carson Palmer into their Ring of Honor, Brock.
Yeah, why are you hating on that?
Dude.
Dude's a winner.
Dude's a Bengal. Like, he's a Bengal. Let's start there. And he's in their Ring of Honor. Is Kurt Warner in there, too? Because guess what?
Probably.
He's a Ram. Like, nice franchise you have. You just borrow other teams' players and
swear.
Throw them into
no,
your...
No, you just wanted to swear.
I didn't
franchise.
Swear.
No, you wanted to.
But I didn't. I
know.
Would never do that.
Sure.
I don't do that kind of thing. I don't curse. I'm a family guy.
Do you
want to
bet on this?
Guy.
How many tapings we're going to do before you do swear?
No, I'm not betting on such a thing. What's the matter with you? All right. Well, speaking of swearing, what was going on with Mike Leach? So let's play the sound. Mike Leach, after a bad... I mean, they looked terrible. His offense looked bad. His defense looked worse. I know it's not his defense, obviously.
He takes no accountability for the defense.
All right, that's a different team.
His offense.
Don't ask him about that.
His offense looked bad. Their defense looked worse. And afterwards, he went off on the team.
We get a lot of good press. We like to read it a lot. We like to pat ourselves on the back. You know, and if we get any resistance, we fold. And what's amazing about this is most of these guys were on the same team last year that was a tough team. Last year's team was a tough team for us, and we got nearly the same guys, and now all of a sudden they're not tough. You know, they're fat, dumb, and happy and entitled.
Can you say that?
All right, can I be the first person to say, I'll say, I love this. I know everybody's freaking out, and this is the worst thing I've ever heard. Mike Leach is a jerk. It's his team, and he's the one, like, look in your mirror. That's what he's doing. He's looking at his team. He's trying to find a way to motivate them by publicly calling them out.
Fat, I don't... dumb, and happy.
And entitled. He didn't call out any specific person and embarrass anybody in particular. He called out his team that has absolutely played like that through the first few weeks. I got no issues with this whatsoever. Okay. In fact, I support it. I don't have an issue with this. And I've told you guys before, I like coaches that play this kind of game. Mm-hmm. I like coaches that were rough. I like coaches that are tough on you. And where his team is at right now, he's Jim Fossil putting the chips into the middle, man. He's not much of a choice.
I'm parsing, okay? I'm parsing. I get that. Three of those I can live with. Fat and happy. You're just fat and happy. Okay, I can live with that. And it goes
Pete Carroll famously went fat and sassy.
Yep, and and you could throw entitled in there. Fine.
You just didn't like dumb.
You can't call your kids dumb, man. You're coaching your kids. If they're dumb, then your teachers, A, you're not teaching, and then the 10 teachers that you hired that you're paying $250,000 to $750,000 bucks to?
I think he meant they're playing dumb. I don't think he meant that they're actually stupid humans.
You can call them fat and happy.
In fact, he said they're the same people that were there last year, so obviously he doesn't think they're dumb.
They are fat, dumb, and happy.
All right, but he also said—
specific words, they are fat, dumb, and happy.
Yeah, they're acting fat, dumb, and happy.
They didn't say acting.
No,
they said they are fat, dumb, and happy.
Mike, you are married to a counselor. You know the importance of language.
Your words matter.
No.
Okay. Matter.
Molly will say to me and rightfully remind me and say, hey, listen, when Haley's acting this way or Titus is acting this way, you can say your behavior is being selfish. You know what? Your behavior is being foolish. Don't call him a fool. Right? You're just kind of empowering that. And I know I am parsing here.
Yeah,
fat and happy and entitled, live with that. Don't call your kids dumb. That reflects right back on you. I really do. And I think that's where players,
totally disagree.
And I bet his leadership council is going to say, hey, dude, don't call us dumb, man. You know, we already deal with a lot of that slight. We're on a campus, in a college campus, where a lot of people look at us and don't think we deserve to be there.
I thought you meant that they were on a campus that everybody already looks down on and thinks people show they're dumb.
Nope, no wazoo shots. Nope, not at all. We already fight some of that stereotype. Don't call me dumb. Right,
and in fact,
some of your play calling against UCLA was dumb. And in fact, there have been studies that have shown that if you took a knee, Reese Davis said on game day, if you took a knee on every play and kicked it out of bounds against UCLA, you would have won that game. But there was some pretty dumb decision making that went into that process as well. Just don't say dumb. Fan happy, entitled, great. We all chuckled. It's funny. This is Mike Leach, who he is. Don't call your kids dumb.
I don't think that's what the reaction has been. I think the reaction is just, oh my God, Mike Leach was mean to his kids. Like, yeah, guess what? They're playing like garbage. And he's a coach who's watching a season on the verge of slipping away.
And I'll tell you what
else. He's throwing up a Hail Mary,
Mike,
to try to fix it.
You know why that team was tough a year ago? There was a 6-year warrior at middle linebacker, and there was a 5th-year warrior at quarterback.
Well, he's got to go find
some
of those
guys. And you take those two elements away?
Yep.
I think you see.
And Jalen Thompson at safety. Woo, they are missing him.
Yes, they are.
Next question, because the Seahawks.
Let's go. This is radio. Come on.
Seahawks finally. Would you stop? Finally ran the ball with some level of success, and not just for one or two plays at the end. They actually ran the ball successfully. A lot of it was Chris Carson, but quite a bit of it was, you know, real holes that he had to run through this weekend. What happened? What changed?
I couldn't have been the only one encouraged to see some actual diversification of run game. That they, when they actually ran a trap, and I forget what Mark Schlereth called it from an O-line term, but he
called it like a short trap
a
quick trap or something like that.
Yep, short, getting short and fat on them, right? Yep, and the big fat guys up front moving people. Like, instead of just getting teed off the first 3 weeks, people were just teeing off on them, and you're getting into formations and tendencies and 3-by-1 sets, and here comes the read zone, and then all of a sudden, oh, that was a trap, and I took an ear hole, and bam, Chris Carson actually gets a chance to breathe and gets chance to get going, and there's a toss sweep, and there's a toss crack, and there's a, and now we can run our zone, and now we can run our stretch, and there was a power, and there was a trap. And I just felt like there was finally some diversification of that run game that this group needs. I know you're big, I know you're strong, and I know you don't mind when number 74 comes out there and says, hey, I'm an eligible number, I'm going to get on that line of scrimmage, and more than likely you know what's coming. But I think anytime you get them guessing just a split second, man, it just adds to Chris Carson's game. And by the way, Procise, that was a heck of a touchdown run, too.
It was.
You know, I know his other run was a little in between, but that touchdown run.
He went hard.
And you could just feel his enthusiasm.
I thought when he jumped
years.
Up in the air, I thought he was going to tear his groin.
Yes.
I thought that was going to be like a psoas or a sports hernia or something like that, jumping in the air to celebrate. It's funny. Look at the stats post-game after this one. Who had more average yards per carry, Seahawks or the Cardinals?
Arizona did, because a couple big plays.
Yeah, I mean, 5 yards per carry compared to 4.3. I would submit it's not just because of those few plays. It's because for the first half, they didn't run the ball well at all.
Mm.
I mean, they tried, but ultimately, you know, and they've seen this with every team this year. They're stuffing the box against them, and they're trying to run against 7 or sometimes 8 guys in the box. No kidding, it doesn't work.
Yep.
And it was Russell throwing it to Disley and Russell throwing it to actually Jerron Brown, who didn't fall down.
No, he did not.
He actually stood up.
Bro, they met almost. I went back and looked at needs and wants.
They did it all.
They nearly met. Thank you. Our final Friday show, the final one, finally, you met
finally
my
listened needs. To you.
Michael Kendricks had some sacks. The role receivers made some plays. Other than DK, I'd ask for a 100-yard day. But a 100-yard day from Carson, yeah, they just about met every one of our needs and wants. Pretty cool.
All right, so that's where the Seahawks are at. That's where the Cougs are at. How about the Huskies? They're sort of the next part of this equation, and they had a really solid game against USC. Was it a great game? We'll discuss here in a moment. So this is Podcast World. We continue on with our version of Brock and Salk, the new version. What do you think so far? Is this what you were expecting?
I think it's feeling pretty good.
Does it feel normal to
you? How about you?
Yeah, I mean, Howdy's still in the room with us, which is bizarre.
So good.
No, I mean, you know how uncomfortable so I feel nice. When he would come into the studio. That
finally.
Would bug me out.
Well, it's like Saved by the Bell, the new class. Like a lot of the same characters are there, but it's a different setting. Like yes. the studio's different. Wait, they're not at Bayside High; they're at college.
I hope it goes
what
better than
Bob
all those
Golic
shows
doing
do.
There?
None of those shows ever work. So hopefully this works better than that.
Saved by the Bell, the wedding.
Yeah,
maybe?
Like none of that works. Uh-uh. Like you take the same cast of characters, put them in a different setting. Name one where that was successful.
I don't sense that at all. I don't feel it at all. I feel an extension of greatness. That's
okay,
what
good.
I'm feeling.
It's definitely weird. I mean, we went through this really dramatic, emotional day. Friday was really hard for me, as you know. I was crying a lot. And then afterwards, I had to like finish out the day of work. I had people in my office 20 minutes later, and I was like, I'm sorry, I can't do this right now. You guys have to give me a few more minutes. I just was like emotionally drained after all that.
You must have napped hard.
Dude, I went home. I was going to go down. I felt bad. I was going to go down and see Danny David Moore's last show down at T-Mobile. Mm-hmm. And I got in my car at 3:00 with the intention of going there. And instead, my car wouldn't let me. It took me home and dropped me off. I slept for 2 hours, woke up for a few, and then slept for 9 more. It was exhausting and just really, really challenging. So it is weird to be back here just a couple days later doing this. And we're excited to be doing this every week and still have this opportunity to be in touch with all of you guys.
And many times this window will be a guest. Or this will kind of be the powerhouse guest that we love
we
to
have
talk
on this
to.
Week?
And multiple reasons.
Laziness?
I'm not going to say
work.
I'm not going to say total laziness because I think with this Husky game too, I'll kind of be the guest. I'll be the guest that got to also have a little bit of a surreal deal.
Because you were there. I mean, you're calling the game for the Huskies this past weekend.
And did the Husky fans send you mean tweets? Are we... I sat at home. I was like, should I start tweeting about Brock and like complaining about him and like... Just Jacob pass complete to Hunter. Great call by Bush. And I was I'm going to tweet Brock right now, and I'm going to call him out because I got to do my part.
Yeah, I would say a mix. I definitely was biased on both sides. Obviously. There were some that said I can never be a Husky again, and then there were some that thought, you know, the Huskies did no wrong. So I did live some of that. But it was cool for me, honestly, a little bit surreal whenever I get into those settings because I know these guys on a personal level. I know Chris Peterson much more on a personal level than I do any other coach and some of these assistants and just being around them. But what always strikes me is in those settings, like, okay, now how is my crew going to feel about these guys? What is that production meeting going to be like? There were some really encouraging things, Mike, and I think there's still some areas short term. And when Chris Peterson says, you know, and I'll ask all these guys, hey, who's your voice? Like who's the ringleader? And he just like, you know how he can get like, I don't know. Like those are just hard to find in this day and age. And we were talking earlier about Gardner Minshew and Peyton Pallure and the impact that those guys had on that program in Pullman. And when you have those igniters and those fire starters, and I said, well, was Buddha kind of your last voice? And he's like, well, to a degree. And he's like
probably Vita. I mean, he's a talker. He's
Vita,
got a lot to say.
Big time talker.
Big time.
But Chris, I think even as he was talking about it, was like, now listen, this sounds negative. I don't mean this is negative. Like we got the most unselfish, great kids that practice and work, and there's like no diva, kind of the OKG philosophies, right? We get our kind of guys. So there's not this kid skipping class, kids practice, you know, entitled and skipping practice and doing their own thing. But in so doing, they also, that edge, right? That just warrior, that like Lawyer Malloy. And I was telling my crew about Lawyer, like throwing chairs and barking and fire starter and just igniting everybody. That is still very much kind of a work in progress.
But that's missing, I think, throughout a lot of football.
Yes,
I don't think
it is.
That's just a Husky thing. I was over the weekend, somebody had tweeted out that Lawrence Taylor video, and I was looking at, did you end up watching that video?
Oh, yes.
And it's a cool one, not just because it's got all of the LT hits and not just because they put it to the music from Inception, both of which are awesome, but the whole like first, minute of it is just him intimidating people. Not
yes.
even just what he did during the play. It's just LT being a like insane human being leading up to it where you're like, oh my God.
Who is that today?
How does it? No, it's so rare.
Where is that?
It's so rare to find anybody who intimidates with that level of intensity,
yeah.
who plays with that level of anger. right? Who just who seems like he's insane. Well, like,
the one who did got suspended for the
just
year.
Just thinking
this
of
week,
that is Vontaze Burfict. But he's not good. I mean, like, LT had all of that insanity, but he had carefully crafted it so that he wasn't getting himself in major trouble, even though he was off the field. I mean, the game was different, right? So he could get away with a lot more than.
I mean, were they all
today.
Just coked out?
But no, but hold on. But LT wasn't a cheap shot artist. I mean, at the end of the day, Burfict is a cheap shot artist. Yep. LT, within the rules, knocked people. I mean, he was ridiculous. But that stuff at the beginning where he's mouth-breathing.
Sure.
Like, I don't know. Maybe the NFL doesn't do as good a job of showing it anymore, but it sure doesn't seem like it's got those kind of players.
And less of that's happening in college football, too. You know, Nick Saban has said that. Like, when I've done some of his games, that the dudes that he had 10, 15 years ago, you just don't see much of that.
You would think some of that would be the perfect antidote to the spread and all the kind of, you know, Big 12-style offenses that are around the college football game. If you had a team, and I know Wisconsin's trying to do it, certainly with what they do offensively, mm-hmm. and you mentioned Stanford and a few other teams before, if you just had some crazed maniacs on defense who were taking those guys out, yep. and maybe you're just not allowed. I mean, maybe you just, there's, you know
yeah,
what?
That's probably
you
part
can
of
try
it
to intimidate
yep.
all you want, but, you know, who was it who got flagged? Hedrick this past weekend for the Seahawks.
Right.
Like, well, if that's a penalty, like, how much can you possibly do?
Yep, fair. Three quick other little takeaways. I kind of gave you the leadership one. The other one, and it strikes me every time, is Jimmy Lake's a head coach. When Jimmy Lake walks in a room, there's just a difference. He's the D coordinator there at Washington. He's done a phenomenal job. He's putting all these dudes in the league. He's recruiting like crazy. He runs his mouth about Mike Leach. I absolutely did ask him about the air raid system, and I kind of said, you know, Jimmy, you made some public comments through the years about how much you enjoy the air raid. And he didn't back down in our meeting. He's like, well, yeah, these guys run the ball. You know, they're not like the guy on the other side of the mountains that is just, you know, so foolish that he runs the same plays all the time and it's the easiest thing to defend. You know, this is a little bit different animal. But anyhow, Jimmy finishes and Joe Davis turns to me. He's like, I mean, that's like, how's that guy not a head coach?
When's he going to be? Next year?
Well, I think he will have this job whenever Chris
really?
Says.
Really? You think he's going to be coaching? He's willing to wait 5-10 more years?
Whenever Chris says, you know what, I'm good.
No,
I don't
come
think
on.
Chris Peters didn't have 10 more years.
I was going to say, what if it's not yes. 5 or 10 years?
Yeah, I don't think.
You think he's out in the next couple of years?
I think Chris Peterson, if he can get to a playoff and do something like that, I don't think Chris Peterson. I would say 5 years would be the longest.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. He's been doing this for well over 30
How old
years.
Is he?
Good question. But he's been doing this for well over 30 years. I don't think he likes a lot of the games and the stuff and the recruiting. I think he's made that kind of a point of the last few
years. He doesn't like
the
vultures, we know. He's right. made that a point.
Yeah.
He is 54. He's turning 55 in 2 weeks.
You don't
weeks.
Think he goes at least until, the, you know, 60, 63? Why not?
He might go to 60, but if the game
Jimmy keeps... Lake's not, even if it's 60, Jimmy Lake's not going to wait around for 5 years to be a head coach. Why would he?
Well,
why wouldn't he go somewhere else? It's not like going somewhere else and getting head coaching experience is going to make it any harder for him to replace Peterson.
Brent Venable has stayed at Clemson for a long time because he loves the guy he works for. He loves the environment. He makes $1.5 to $2 million, and Jimmy's salary is right, you know, is growing, and it's right up there, and I've got everything I want. And oh, by the way, in this conference, I have a chance, and with this offensive system, I have a chance to have the top-ranked defense every single year.
Yeah,
top
but
scoring
at some
defense,
point,
top total
to
defense.
What end?
Yeah, I don't buy it. I'm
Does
sorry,
he want to parlay
man.
That to a job?
Yes. Like, why do that when you could go get paid double that to go be a head coach somewhere and get the same level of experience to get you ready? He could still take the Husky job. And Chris, I mean, there's no rules preventing college coaches from bailing on their program, even though the kids are forced to stay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sure, I'll bail. So why wait? There's no reason to be a coach in waiting like that. You can
well,
go somewhere else
other,
and come back.
How many other?
Why not do what Mike Hopkins did?
How many other jobs, let's just say, in the western part of the United States are more desirable than being the coordinator making a couple million bucks at Washington?
I would hope a bunch.
I mean,
he had a great opportunity at Colorado this year, and we don't know how far those talks progressed.
And he
but
looked
a great
at
program,
it and said,
a college town.
He looked at it and said, very hard to win. In a Pac-12 South with the LA schools that will eventually get right, an AD that's probably not long for the job, an environment that's not football first. I mean, I think he just looked at a lot of those different scenarios and has, and there are jobs. I'm not obviously.
I mean, well, when your guy at USC gets fired this year, is he a candidate there?
I would think so, but every one of those SC fans wants one guy, and it's your favorite, and that would be Urban Meyer.
Well, it just shows you how awful at USC
and
fans
I'm with
are.
Him. Urban, all the way. Let's go, baby.
You want that? Oh, because you want USC to be good for the help for the whole
the
conference.
The Pac-12 needs USC, and therefore USC needs Urban Meyer.
Yeah, but also the world doesn't need Urban Meyer coaching a team.
The other thing, two other quick little...
I'm more of a fan of the world than I am of the Pac-12, and the world doesn't need
two
that.
Other quick little takeaways. These might be tidbits. I don't know. Jacob Eason, totally different kid than the one that I met 4 years ago. Totally different.
Really?
And I don't
How
know.
So?
Just comfortable in his skin. I think the partying and the you know the limelight and everything and experiencing it on steroids down in the SEC and all of the recruiting and all of the fun and all the shenanigans and all the party and everything that went down at Georgia. I think he came here. And I said this a couple weeks ago, that this may be the perfect fit for Jacob Eason. Maybe not the perfect offense. And as it showed last weekend, still a work in progress with Bush Hamden and everything else. But as far as just the structure and the fun, he's like, yeah, I'm off Twitter. You know, I got friends, you know, on Facebook or whatever. But I just like the guys. You know, I like the linemen. I like hanging out with some of these dudes. We listen to country music. Like, life is just – it was chaos in Athens, Georgia. He was bigger than life. He was made to be bigger than life. He was all of this. And I think he just kind of got some of that pomp and circumstance out. And he was just a pretty darn laid-back, comfortable in his own skin guy. Different guy than I met 4 years ago. And then lastly, so was Bush Hamden. And you know, and you even saw this in the game on Saturday where they ran this double reverse up 28-14 their midfield.
That was dumb.
He runs this double reverse pass, this huge risk reward. Hunter Bryant makes a horrible decision, should have never flipped it, yada, yada, yada. But he said to us the day before, he goes, you know what? A year ago, I really regret not being aggressive. And all I did was play to the defense. And we had a great defense, and they were number one, and we ended up going to the Rose Bowl. But, you know, just looking back on that and sitting with him last season, week five, this season, week five, and a year ago, he didn't know what he was. I even asked him point blank. I said, hey, Bush, how much different are you as a coordinator? What did you really learn? Because when I sat with you last year, I don't know if you remember the answer, but you were like, well, I don't know if we're a tempo team. I don't know if we're a two-back team. I don't know if we're a two tight end team. I don't, you know, we're still figuring all of that out. He said, oh, I remember that. Yeah, and I did a lot of soul searching and a lot of studying, and certainly with Jacob here, I never want to leave a game this season with bullets in the holster. So while that play imploded, and while there was a pick the week before in BYU in the fourth quarter, and while that play was a disaster, I think you're going to see that mindset over the course of the season, is we got this kid at quarterback, we've got this O-line, we got Hunter Bryant and some weapons, we will not leave any game this year without the bullets being fired.
Cool. All right. Well, so Seahawks fans have had quite a bit to hear on this show. We've talked some Huskies. We've talked some Cougs. Let's talk Mariners for a few minutes before we do answer the question, Jared, because they wrapped up their season. It was an interesting final week for them. You know, they're not a great team, obviously, and they're going to finish with the number six pick in the draft. And, you know, that shows you, A, how bad they were, and B, how bad some of the other teams that were rebuilding this year, because they were even worse.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to just kind of share a few thoughts on where the Mariners are at and now where they go. And the first is our guy Scott Servais, who we spent some time talking to. He was one of the last guests ever on the radio show. I don't think I've made any. I like him a lot. I think he's a very good manager and in many ways the right manager for this team. I do think that the fact that Joe Maddon comes available, though, is a conversation. It's going to be a conversation not just here in Seattle, anywhere.
Mm.
Any of the teams that did not make the playoffs, and probably with some of the teams that did, you have to at least have a conversation about whether or not your team would be upgrading with Joe Maddon. And one of the ways to look at that is, you know, what the Seahawks did with Pete Carroll. There are a lot of management groups that would not have fired Jim Mora. Now, I would have. I think they did the right thing whether they got Pete Carroll or not, because I think Mora's nuts. But based on the season he had, you could have made the argument that there was no real need to fire him. They said, no, we have a chance to do something better. They didn't fire him for nothing. They fired him to get a guy that they had identified as being someone to that they wanted to lead their program moving forward.
Yep.
I am not in favor of firing Scott Servais. In fact, I'm in favor of giving him all the tools he needs, because I think he did a heck of a job this year of building culture and letting these young kids grow up and teach, and what the catchers did this year in terms of their growth. I think he actually did a pretty good job with the tools and resources that he had. But if Joe Maddon's available, don't you have to have the conversation?
How significant an upgrade is Joe Maddon?
You know, I don't know. It's the managerial spot.
Because I know the hype. I know the name. I know the perception. I know the titles.
It's hard to say. That job is so funky. In this day and age, half of the managers out there are just, you know, vessels through which the front office, does their mathematics.
Yes.
So in that regard, the managers aren't that interesting or important. But Joe Maddon took the Rays to the World Series. He ended the curse with the Cubs. He is a culture builder. He understands the in-game stuff. He's a mad genius. I mean, there's a lot of things about him that provide some relevance. And when you see the attendance numbers dip by what? It was like they went from 2-point-something million last year to like 1.7 this year. And that's a huge attendance drop. I do like Scott, and I will in no way be – I want Scott to keep the job. And we'll see whether or not Joe Maddon ends up going somewhere else. But if you do end up, if it's Joe Maddon you want, I certainly couldn't be mad at
Joe
him
Maddon goes
decision.
To the Angels. Are you bummed?
Yeah, you're Joe Maddon's worried. A good manager.
You're very worried.
Yeah, you already got the Astros and the problem they present on paper, and now you're going to add a really good manager to Mike Trout and Otani. And yeah, of course, I'm a little bit worried.
To me, I guess my gut reaction to that is for the first time. This thing feels totally all-inclusive with the Mariners between Andy McKay, Jerry DePoto, Scott Servais. It actually feels like they've got some level of continuity and structure.
But is there a but to that statement? That's it?
No, you're I don't good? Think there needs to be. I'm with Brock. I think there is. It doesn't mean you don't have the conversation, and I would expect Jerry DePoto and John Stanton and Kevin Mather to have the conversation. I don't think that's a move they're going to make because I think they are happy with what they're doing.
Here's where the but would be. But if John Stanton feels like, okay, we need to blow the whole thing up, and I need somebody from the ground up that has been there and who has done it and has had really an established like culture as Maddon had.
That's what
in
Maddon
Tampa.
Does.
Yes.
The argument that you would make if you were to do it is you say, hey, look, I really like what Scott Servais is doing. He's good at this, and Joe Maddon is the best at this specific thing.
But
I mean, that would be the argument that you would make. I don't know whether it's going to go down
the grounded reality argument is when this thing starts to unravel a little bit, if the actual ownership group gets a little bit antsy about this plan and they don't feel like it's progressing fast enough, who's the first name that will go? The first name that will go in the brain trust is the manager.
I don't know
that
that's
very
true.
First
I don't know whether that will happen in this case, only because they didn't give him the resources to compete. Nobody thinks they did. I mean, this team did what they were supposed to do this year. They didn't underperform. If anything, they probably won more games than some of us thought they would.
When they roll out a team next year and ownership believes that they've set the precedent that these guys, they started already, now they should be getting into their time to
we'll
be
see.
Great.
We'll see. If I'm Jerry, I'd be a lot more nervous than if I were Scott. At least that would be me. I think that Jerry's the one who would bear the brunt of that because, hey, where are these guys? What's the deal? I don't think anybody expected Scott to win any more games this year than they did. And in the meantime, I thought we saw some legitimate growth from some of the youngsters. First of all, the two catchers, neither of whom I think we expected that from, both grew and got better. Narvaez became a better defensive catcher, and Murphy turned himself into a pretty good offensive player, which nobody thought we would see. And as a platoon, they were as good as any catcher out there in baseball, right? I liked what I saw from J.P. Crawford, and the big deal with him was, can the defense improve? It did. He was a solid defensive shortstop. And then you got a little something out of the Austin Nolas and some of those guys this year. Throw in Kyle Lewis at the end of the season, and I think you can make an argument that some of that stage is being set, but the idea that they're going to be ready to go and in contention next year, I mean, I don't come close to
that's
that.
That's just great. Joe Maddon will just go to the Angels. That's great. That'll just be
just
wonderful.
Because the Angels are the first team thinking about it, I don't know whether Joe Madden's going to be jumping aboard that train. If I'm Joe Maddon, you want to go to work for Artie Moreno again in that dysfunctional organization that has found it impossible to build around Mike Trout and Otani and everything. No, I don't know. I don't know whether he would have any interest in going to the Angels, whether they're interested in him or not. So I'm not like sitting here and shaking that Joe Maddon is going to be an Angel. Nothing close to
it. Oh, I am.
Hopefully this is going to work. As you know, I've been very skeptical of doing Answer the Question Jerk through Twitter. It's never worked before. It's always been a text platform.
Hashtag ATQJ.
Yeah, I know. We'll see.
Mike,
I think it's not top of mind.
Mike, had 100 Answer the Question Jerk responses.
I don't believe it.
Over 100.
I still don't believe that they'll be as good, and I guess we'll find out together here in just a moment.
This is Brock and Sox. Answer the question, jerk.
Keep asking questions. Come on, I'll answer them. Come on, I'm here. I'm going to answer your questions, dang it.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Well, don't just stand there. Answer the question, jerk!
I don't know, man. I don't know if this is going to work. I'm trying to do Answer the Question Jerk, but I'm on my phone. I didn't have my glasses in here, so I'm using Brock's Ebenezer's.
That's ridiculous.
What are you talking about? I need glasses now. I'm getting old.
Grandfather Salk here, sharing my friend Brooke's glasses.
You're too loud. Pop on the mic. For God's sakes, Howdy.
And you don't need to be on the phone, Mike. You have a computer in front of you.
I know, but it was going to take too long to get all of it pulled up.
It's got a screen that's 10 times the size.
We didn't have enough time during the break.
Okay, all right.
It's too small. How do I can operate like this?
In the break? What are you talking about?
You know, during the commercials. Right?
You're a mess.
I'm not a mess. It's just new for me.
What you got? You better give the Twitter handle, too.
All right, let's see. I'm not giving everybody's Twitter handle.
Yes, you are.
I am?
Yes.
All right. At JustinWeb72. This is dumb.
It's ridiculous.
Okay. No, please don't.
Okay.
Thank you. My first child is coming soon. What is your best advice for a new dad to keep the baby and mom happy?
Ooh, this is a really good question. A really good question.
I don't even remember.
I'll tell you from experience, having done this 3 times in the last 4 years.
Is Melissa pregnant for the fourth time?
No, I don't think so.
Well, I
don't know.
Is this a possibility?
I don't know. Anything is possible.
He's been nothing but pregnant and kids the last five years.
But I will say, learning from experience, what you should do is take the first couple days of birth off. Then go back to work. Do your work for a week or so. She's going to be so pumped up on chemicals that her body's producing, she's not even going to know you're gone. And then when those all leave and she's sitting there holding the bag with all these kids or just your one kid, then you come back home. You take your paternity leave after a week of the kids being born.
That's a good idea because you usually have the most help, right? If you've got family or friends or people coming
Nobody
by.
Nobody cares about you after the second week of that kid's life.
That's really good.
Nobody.
When Cecily was born later that day, remember, I went out house hunting. Like that afternoon, I had to go look at a house.
You're the man of the house, Mike.
You've
got to put a roof over their head.
That's exactly right.
You're the man. You're the man.
Put food on the table.
That's what it means to be the grandfather.
Yes. All right. Flop shot or bump and run?
I'm a bump and run guy.
That's just because you can't execute a flop shot.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Out of the rough, though, I think you can handle that. It's so hard to do out of the fairway because you just get underneath it.
Yep.
But out of the rough.
And yet the pros are the exact opposite.
Yeah, they don't care.
The pros want to have that tight carpet lie.
What's the matter
with that? So they can hit that in the fourth groove and actually, I mean, it's just insane.
Did you watch any of Tony Romo this weekend?
I did not. Did he make the cut?
No. Oh. But he played pretty well. I mean, I think he was like 3 over, 2 over, something like that. I mean, he's got a really, really nice swing, and you know, if you were playing golf with him, you'd be like, "Oh my God, this dude is a pro."
I'm really,
but when
really...
you see him opposite the pros,
yes,
you can still see the difference in just how flexible they are, their turns, their hips.
Yep,
it's crazy. That's a cool tournament.
Really, really worried for his wife and kids. If he's that good a golfer and that good of an announcer, someone's getting the short end.
That's exactly right. That's a good tournament, by the way. That Safeway, they get a lot of like legitimate people there, even though it's off season. Nobody else cares. All right, fine.
I watched the Safeway. I was watching the seniors out at, were they, Pebble Beach. I was watching the British seniors at St. Andrews.
It's really,
like,
it's really too bad that we don't have that
Alex
drop.
Alex Van Royen was out there.
Of Salk asking Scott Van Pelt on one of the first shows.
Wasn't it funny?
Tell me why I should be watching the Masters? And you just said,
why should I care? Why should I care about the Masters?
And then you just said, it was about what is the Masters? Why is the Masters more important than the other tournaments?
Have you seen the Safeway?
Safeway's good. Safeway's underrated.
Some 11 years later, you're watching the Safeway Classic.
Jerks.
I mean, it's shoulder season, but they still get a great turnout.
They call it the silly season. Politics and radio doesn't happen. Will it occur in the podcast? I feel like you two are maybe even on opposite sides.
Really?
If so, advice on maintaining friendships if it's different.
Actually, no.
Yeah, we're not going to talk politics.
No.
We're not going to do that.
This is a sports podcast.
But yes, our opinions are different. Yes. Very, very different. Jerks, should the Mariners break the bank and pursue Gerrit Cole in free agency this offseason? They need an ace in this new look rebuild.
$34 million a year.
My Fox crew says no chance. He's going back to L.A.
Yeah.
West Coast guy likes the sunshine,
went
and it's
UCLA.
Either
going to
be the Angels, the Dodgers. So
that'd be a real shame if he went to the Angels.
You see our boy Paxton out? He's got a tight butt.
What do you mean he has a tight butt?
He like pulled his gluteus maximus or something. He's out again. He's got some other new injury no baseball player has ever had
before. This long in the season to get a Paxton injury.
I've never heard of that. I've never heard of a tight
butt.
They
think it was like a nerve issue or something. Yeah, he's going to be out.
So he won't pitch in the playoffs?
No, they said they think he'll be back for the playoffs.
Tight butt.
Well, that's like now. So he's not really out. I mean, the playoffs start now.
Well, he missed his last start.
Okay. Well, that's just to start off, getting him tuned up and ready, right?
Is he going to get a mega deal? Isn't he about due for a payday as well? Maybe one more year of arbitration?
I don't know the Yankees are going to pay him. I'll be curious.
He's got one more year.
Huh. Jerks, where's DK been the last couple games? He's been out there. They've thrown the ball.
Yep.
He almost came up with a really nice catch in the end zone.
He needed to catch that ball.
Really?
Yeah, that's a catch that if you're a big receiver and you're in a one-on-one on a very average to below league average corner, they're going to get their hands on you. They're going to get their hands up near the football, and you've got to be strong enough to rip it away and make that play. Hmm. That's got to be a play against that corner you make. I was kind of bummed about that. But he is a rookie.
Would either of you grow a mustache and then keep it for 3 months? No.
No.
Absolutely not. Not a chance. I look terrible in a mustache.
Can you grow a mustache?
Not well. No. I get hair everywhere.
Wait, what?
Else. I got hair everywhere else in the body, but not really on my upper lip. Just a little bit. It's lighter.
You had a beard with the mustache.
Yeah,
the
I can do
right?
a beard, but even I did a goatee for a while. It just doesn't work out.
Kyle?
Whoa, goatee?
I did a goatee for a while in college.
That's evil.
Whoa.
That's like when Rick Riz had the goatee. There was just something sinister about it.
I drove across country and I didn't shave for that whole trip. And then when I was done, I just shaved everything but the goatee.
I think you and I might have had a goatee at the same time in life. I was 15 years old with a goatee and you were 25 years old with a goatee.
No, I was like 19.
Have you ever gone just straight stash, Audi?
No, I've gone from beard to clean, and I kept a stash for a day just to show
just
people what
fun.
It would be like.
And
I look like Mario.
You have a very thick mustache area.
And my face gets even wider. Like
great.
Very,
that's just
very
what you
wide. I look like a Ninja Turtle. That's how wide my face gets with a mustache.
When I had the goatee, I also had my head shaved at the time, so it was quite
rude. You're super evil, Mike.
Yeah.
Can we see a picture of that?
Guy
might
you
be
also,
one.
Like, have a chain connected to your wallet? What else was going on?
Sitting there listening to his dual death metal music at the same time.
Shaved head with a goatee.
Yep. Yep.
Wow.
Shaved head goatee. It's a good look. I was, I like that.
Just missing a tattoo.
wasn't missing it at all. What'd you think of the podcast? Did that work?
That went fast.
Did it?
Yeah, I thought so. You?
I think so.
A little awkward?
Yeah, super awkward. Like everything I've been trained to do for the last 15 years, this is totally the opposite of it, so... we'll do it again next week, right?
I think it is critical to have Howdy between us. That was that. I felt
like to find a different room.
It felt so good. It felt so good for everyone.
It was great to hear Kyle. I thought.
Do you want to do a show breakdown here while everyone's
still
with us?
Okay,
we can sort of discuss what we liked, what we didn't
I will
like.
Say this:
a little behind the scenes.
Having
stuff.
Done my Above and Beyond podcast, ending the podcast like the weirdest.
It's very hard because there's nothing coming up next.
No,
I mean, I guess we just say that
we'll
see you guys
week.
In a week.
Love
and
you guys.
Until then, hey,
Barn.
See you, everybody.
Get to the chopper!